Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Happy 100.
Happy 100. We did it.
We're waiting for Rob, but I figured we could just chit chat for a little bit until he gets here.
Yeah, get started with the original crew.
So
Wait
I was
for
trying
Johnny come lately.
I was trying to remember. I contacted you pretty to see if you wanted to do this, right? But we met on the
Actually,
forums, or is that how we did it?
we met through Twitter and then Facebook.
Oh, okay.
I reached out to you guys after listening to DC Noise for a little while.
Oh.
Became friends with you guys that way, and first on Twitter and then on Facebook, and then
And then I must have seen you had a passion for old comics, and I reached out to you.
kind of. I think you mentioned on Twitter that you wanted to start a podcast about old comics, and I said something about that being awesome, or and you asked, well, do you want to be on it? So
It's been a fun journey for me 'cause I get to play with any random thing I want to in the past, so I like that.
yeah, the format's open enough that it's not too restrictive.
However, I really did enjoy when we did the New Gods Fourth World stuff. I really looked forward to that.
Yeah, that was really good. The shows we've talked about too have been fun. Doing Battlestar Galactica, that was, I mean,
I
we
still want to
started
f
to
finish that. But we have to find another approach because we were watching it on Netflix. I have the DVDs, but you don't.
No, but I mean,
But
I
oh,
had
we
to
had
buy
Buck
Buck
Rogers
Rogers.
too. That
That
was
that's what I
fun.
meant to say. That's what I meant to say, because I know we actually went through those, and I don't know if I would have gotten around to watching those on my own if we hadn't been doing it for the show. That just kept me, that was my reminder and my homework, and it got me to get through the full series, and I'm glad that I did, because I enjoyed watching those and talking about them.
Yeah, and I liked the I thought I was gonna really hate the second season, and I didn't. I think there was only like one episode where I didn't care for, and then the rest I really liked.
Yeah. It wasn't as good as the first season, but it wasn't
Definitely
horrible.
not. And the effects went south. They changed a little more generic, kind of like going from Superman 2 to Superman 3. And then it's a quest for peace.
Yeah. You could tell the money was not there, but there were things to like about it.
That's why I like. Matter of fact, you talk about moods and stuff, and I don't. I'm like in strange mood right now. Like I was in the Marvel mood, but now I'm like in a retro mood. In a hard case crime mood, and I'm actually reading novels
Yeah, I think
because I
that's.
can't get enough in the comics, so I'm jumping ship for a while, and I'm enjoying it. I was telling Barb, like I thought it would be rough for me because I'm so used to having images shown to me instead of me imagining what these characters look like based on the words, you know. And you form your own image in your head.
Yeah, sometimes it's nice to see what people can, what writers can do with just words.
And they can do a lot more. Like they dealt like when they describe a character in a novel, it's got so many more dimensions.
Well, it's a different medium,
You can't physically see it. But you can see different aspects of the character through words
Yeah,
and how they interact.
it's a little easier to go internal on a character's thoughts and stuff. There's tricks to do that with visual mediums like comics and movies. I mean, they have ways of doing that, but I think it's a little easier to do that. But yeah, Hard Case Crime is really cool. I mean, and a lot of those are retro. They do publish some newly written stuff, but a lot of it is stuff that went out of print a long time ago, which I think I've said. I don't know exactly when it was, but several years ago, I got real into them.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now, and I went from comic to TV to the books now. Except the book
Yeah.
that I got in first isn't in the world of Quarry. It's a Stephen King novel. I think it's a recent one called Joyland. But it is in that crime noir. Rob, are you there? Huh. I thought he said he's ready.
I see his face.
I see his face, but I don't hear him.
No, well, he was having the problems I had last time.
Yeah.
I checked, I used the Echo service before I even tried this time, but.
Yeah, let me hang up on him and then say, hey, try it and then tell me when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that the. I think Stephen King has published two books through Hard Case Crime, and I'm almost positive that they're both newly written. I think he just kind of likes the publisher, likes what they're doing, that they're putting back into print all these old pulp novels that, back in the 50s and things like that, that you used to be able to pick up real all over the place,
I haven't read much Stephen King either. Like there's only three books I've read. I've read Salem's Lot, Misery, and now this one. I've seen a lot of the movies, the adaptations, which I'm sure are like totally different.
Yeah, they tend to
I
be.
never read The Shining, but I love the first Shining film, and I hear it's like different from the book because they came out with the second Shining movie with the guy from Wings, and I watched it, and it was very different, especially towards the end.
Yeah, they did make a lot of changes to the end. I would say that my personally that they ultimately tell the same story for the most part. But I like both. The Shining is one of the better adaptations. Obviously, the adaptations of his stuff are all over the place in terms of quality, but they're definitely even the good movies are obviously going to be a different experience from the books, but.
Well, I think Shelley Duvall and Jack Nicholson made it though, because I think Jack showed it's a horror that I don't think I've ever experienced except when I'm camping and stuff. But it's like when you're isolated, like you think differently, like you're not used to being isolated from everything.
Yeah,
And in their case they
there's
were,
that.
and they were stuck. And I could see it causing like some craziness.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've read Shining twice. I read it once as a kid. It was one of the first adult books I ever read. And then I read it again several years ago as an adult, and it was interesting. I had very different reactions to it because as an adult, I noticed how much more of it is about the horror of failure as a father and a husband. Because in the beginning, Jack is someone who has had problems in the past with alcoholism and domestic violence. And it's almost heartbreaking the way that the whatever forces or whatever it is that within the hotel take advantage of those weak parts of him and basically turn him into the worst possible version of himself.
Which is taking the two elements that are his weaknesses and making them his
Yeah.
crazy strengths. I mean,
Yeah, so
it's focusing on his weaknesses, and he gets worse and worse
amplifying
with
them.
time, amplifying. That's the term I was looking for.
Yeah, amplifying them. Yeah, I didn't really. When I was a kid, I just focused on like on the scariness of and the isolation of them being stuck in this hotel and the stuff with his son and his son's abilities and things, and that stuff's all there. But I didn't really, as an adult, as a male adult especially, I definitely, even though I'm not a father, as a husband and stuff, I definitely saw that aspect of it.
In the movie, they kind of do that because you kind of can see that you don't see how alcohol was a driving force, but you sort of see just by the way he looks, and when he goes and looks for the job, he's sort of desperate to get this job, like to support his family and actually succeed in what he thinks his real job is, which is a writer. You know, he's like, oh, I can focus on my writing and have all this time. And then the kid having those abilities is it seems to be a theme in a lot of King books, you know. I know it's
Yeah,
in
I
The
haven't.
Dark Tower, and I have read The Dark Tower, but in a different medium, so I can't really count it. Because they
Oh.
released it in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, adaptation, yeah.
Yeah, the adaptation.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, he actually wrote, I haven't read it, but he wrote a sequel kind of called Doctor Sleep that is Danny, the son. It takes place when he's an adult.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know too much about it though. I haven't read it, but I've read a lot of Stephen King over the years, but some of his more recent stuff I haven't gotten around to reading. But
Yeah,
I read a lot growing
my
up.
wife has always said, and I've heard this from other people, that he starts a book better than he finishes. But with the two examples that I've read, I thought he finished well too. 'Cause Misery was like, I don't know, it was like intense. And it was something I've
Yeah.
never like experienced. Like I've seen like fan obsession, but like fan capture, it's different. Like when I was younger, I watched when I was really young with my parents play Misty for me. And that's sort of like a fan becoming obsessed with somebody. She listened to his radio show. He had a jazz show at late night on the radio, and she just started listening and then became part of him and started psychologically torturing him. So yeah, it was I've seen like that kind of thing, but not to this like extreme. That and it's probably been out there for a while, because there's been movies like The Fan and a couple other things, but this one just hit me like as something different that I hadn't seen in a medium or anything before.
Yeah, funnily enough, Misery was, I think, the second novel I ever read of his.
Yeah, I read that one in high school. And Harley's gonna be in and out all day because I got up late. What I mean by late is like 7. 7:30, and I didn't have time to take her, 'cause lately she usually our walks are like 20 minutes, 'cause she pulls, and she goes pretty fast. But I think she's getting to the point where she'd rather stop and sniff stuff, so it turns into like a 38 to 40 minute walk. And that's where I get my steps, is it's over a mile when I take her on the long one. And then sometimes I
Yeah,
take her
you're
twice a day, so that's already 2 miles. And then I get on the elliptical once, usually, typically, and then on some days I go twice.
Yeah, you definitely get a lot of steps now that we're Fitbit friends.
Yeah.
You're at the top of my list. It used to be my
I don't
mom that
really.
was
The
always.
sad part though is, I eat. You know, like if I would lower my intake, that's where my calories would start. I'd start burning more because I'm eating less.
Yeah, the diet is part of it too, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so he says he's ready, so we got some retro Stephen King in. Let's see if Rob's ready to
Yeah.
work with us. If he's tardy.
Hello?
Hello. Yay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I
You
had my
got.
wireless headset, but you know what? I gotta realize I only record with you guys and it's once every 2 weeks, and so I didn't charge it in between, and I tried using it and it was dead. And then I had to basically like turn Skype off and do everything and then plug in my actual ones for it to recognize it.
I figured that's what was happening because I saw you go off and then come back.
Yep. Didn't have any juice. No juice. I gotta remember to charge that sucker the day before because in 2 weeks there's not gonna be any juice left.
Oh, turn it off too.
Well, I do have it turned off when I don't use it, but you know, I guess that's enough. That's weird that it still drains the battery when it's turned off.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe it's the duration though, like 2 weeks. Like I don't have 2 weeks, but I know like if I leave it off, it keeps its charge within, two 3 days because I don't
yeah, but
charge it all
that's what I
weekend.
think it is, you know,
Yeah.
we're talking for almost 3 hours, and then I just turn it off and set it aside for 2 full weeks, and I see.
it's just, yeah, it's probably
Maybe
going to be
one of your kids
indefinite.
has a podcast that they're not telling you about.
Yeah.
You know what? I was wondering what they were doing last week.
What
It's
would their
called like,
podcast be about? What are they into?
Zach does a Transformer podcast.
Okay.
Transformers. Oh, And Allie does crafts. She Okay.
I,
It's hard to describe crafts on an audio podcast, but she manages. But Zach, I heard, has no trouble coming up with stuff to talk about.
No, not at all.
No, I
don't
know what got him into the Transformers big time. I think it was just seeing stuff on TV. Oh, I know what it was. Somehow they got into with my dad, with my dad's, you know, smartphone. He
Yeah.
was letting them watch Play-Doh and other type, mostly Play-Doh videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
They'd watch, you know, the different products and what they were making out of Play-Doh and stuff. And as probably as just other things came up down the line, there was a couple like, you know, Transformer transformation videos. Where somebody would actually do all the transformations for
Yeah.
their old or new toys, and so he started watching them, and he was like, that was it for him for, oh God, over a year. Now
Wait,
he's more like,
transformations after on Transformers or with Play-Doh?
no, with Transformers, because
Oh,
what I think
okay.
happened is that, you know, it gives you other things that you might like, you know,
Right,
once they.
right. So he saw like Play-Doh morphing into all
Yeah.
these different things.
Yeah, and
And
then
then it led to watching the Transformers, and he's like, "Oh, that morphs into stuff."
exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay, I gotcha.
And now he loves Legos, so I mean, he just loves building and taking things apart, like that type of stuff. So
Yeah.
Transformers was a really good start with that, but then I mean, with Legos, he builds exactly what it shows to build, but then he also will just decide to just build something on his own sometimes, so.
I had Legos as a kid, but I never got into them. I was more into the Erector set.
Oh, I was more into Legos than the Erector sets. I don't think I ever
The
had.
Erector set, so you could build cars that moved and pulley systems, and I mean they were dangerous, but they were awesome.
Looked too hard for
And then the Lincoln Logs, for some reason, I would love to build the, cabins.
We bought one set of Lincoln Logs for them when they were probably second Christmas, and that was still a little too young.
able to do much. But you know, recently we brought them back out, but we only have that one big round, you know, tin can.
Yeah, that's how they used to come, though. That's awesome.
So it's the old fashioned, but there's just not a lot in there, so you can't really build much more than a very small.
You need a couple sets to be imaginative. You can build a house.
Yeah, so there's not a ton for them, right? You know, with that, they get bored easily.
Yeah, I was definitely a Lego kid.
I'm finding a new passion for Legos, though, with my niece and nephew. I'll sit there and put together some of the the kits, and I have more fun. I think I have more fun than they do.
Even before the kids came, we started going into the they came out with like a, I don't know what it was called, what the line was, but basically it was good for Halloween. It was like a lot of monsters, and they had a big haunted house. And this was like 2-3 years before we had kids. Bought the big haunted house. Me and Stacy put it all together, and like we put it out like for Halloween. It was just like, I mean, it was probably 1.5-2 feet high. And a really big set. And it was a lot of fun to build. So even as adults, it can be fun.
Yeah, I like following the directions and stuff. I bought a little 2-pack that has the Flash and Captain Cold, and each have their own little car.
The little car, yeah.
Yeah, I have that.
What kind of?
Put that together.
So there's a Flash car and a Cold car?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, they each have their own.
The Cold car makes sense. Yeah. The Flash car doesn't so much.
Yeah, I know. When I was putting that together, I'm like, and why do you need a car exactly, Flash?
Maybe to take people for a ride. Like maybe he could power it and then fit like 3 or 4 people in there. Because it's rough, like holding them by the waist and running.
Maybe just when his feet get tired, I'll charge something up.
You'll sometimes see him do that, like carrying people, and there's only so much you can carry. And if you, he doesn't have superhuman strength, so it's got to be hard to carry people. I mean, I'm sure he's optimal, like he's probably works out and he's an adventurer, so his strength is like above a normal human being, but carrying more than 3 bodies is gotta be taxing on the Flash.
Exactly.
Unless the Speed Force is pulling them, you know, like somehow absorbing the gravity.
Yeah.
I have seen them do it that way sometimes, where they say that the Speed Force is carrying them along, but I think it's most realistic if they'll have them carry them in like a fireman's carry or whatever they call it, where you put them over your back and then you think about it like, well, a normal human could carry a person like that this far, and so if he can get much farther in that period of time, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen him like carry stuff too in the backdraft of his speed.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, kind of like in his wake or whatever.
Yeah, in his little
That's how Wally used to, I think, bring his kids along towards the end there when he was when they had powers.
Yeah.
But
So anyway, we have some we're at episode 100, so we have a few questions, and then we have a book to cover and also another set of questions. So let's start with the initial questions. We have one from Chris Campbell. And this one says, if you could have a vintage car in your garage pre-1975, what would it be?
I'm not a car guy at all.
I am not a car guy, and I'm going to pick something that I loved driving that was pre-1975. So I'm going to pick, and plus it was in the Quarry, if you watch the Quarry show, which is he drives a similar car that I had, so I'm gonna pick a 73 Maverick because I loved it, man. That thing was a V8 and it was just like a powerful car. It really was.
Yeah, I don't even know what one looks like.
Yeah, it's It's not that pretty. It kind of can look like a muscle car if they. It sort of has the body of one, but it was built when cars were tough too. Like they weren't built out of the plastic and they were built out of steel and they didn't bend much. They were pretty strong cars. Like if you Google it, you'll see it's like a 73 Maverick. Some of them have them beefed up. The guy in Quarry, he didn't beef his up, but it looked pretty awesome. Some of the
Oh yeah.
question isn't fair to you guys though, because you guys are a younger generation too.
I'm
So,
not that much younger than you, Michael.
well, you're younger.
What are you,
You
48?
wouldn't be driving a 73 Maverick.
Well, neither would you.
What?
How old were you in 73?
I drove it because it was the hand-me-down. My parents handed me down their car. So they had a
I
73 Maverick and they had a Mustang. And
I forget though. How old are you?
I'm 48.
Yeah, so I'm 45. I'm gonna be 46 in a month. So that's not much difference.
Yeah, I think of you guys as the old ones. I'm
Yeah,
one that's a lot younger.
Chris is a whippersnapper.
Yeah.
I hang around with people older than me, so I always feel younger.
It's a good idea. I've still been trying that at work, and I still, believe it or not, I'm one of the younger people in my department, but it's a lot of the people above me are starting to leave, so that's not going to last very long.
Yeah, it is a tactic that eventually fails.
Yes.
Like when I'm elderly, I'm just gonna have to sit in the cemetery. Like, so how are you guys doing? Still dead, huh? But
Did you got an answer, Chris? I thought of an answer, but you can
no,
go
go
ahead.
ahead then. Go ahead.
All right, so my answer, at first I was kind of not thinking of one, but I absolutely, this is a really true answer. I absolutely love the old-fashioned like Rolls-Royces. I don't know if they're like from the 30s or whatever, but I would absolutely love to have a Rolls-Royce like one of those with those. You know how like they have like the footboards on the sides and stuff like
Yeah, the
that?
running boards.
Yeah, something like that. It was actually highlighted in Joe Hill did a book called Nosferatu, and it was an I don't remember what the year was, but it was an old Rolls-Royce Wraith, and that's what I would absolutely
This
love
was
to have.
a Joe Hill book.
Yeah, a real book.
Well, it was obviously a vampire book.
It's not straight up vampire, but it definitely by the name you get the idea that it definitely has that type of feel. It's a little bit
Interesting.
more to that, but if you end up enjoying your reading that you've been doing, I would highly recommend that book. It's probably my favorite of his three or four books that he's written so far.
Ah.
Isn't it Nosferatu? Isn't that spelled like it's a license plate?
Yeah, because that's his the Wraith's license plate. Yeah, it's like N0S or maybe it's a five. I don't remember.
Four
Yeah, four. Yeah, it is. It's spelled like a license plate.
A2.
Yeah, it's
So
really.
I'm not really a big car guy either, although when it comes to cars aesthetically, I definitely do have a preference for American cars from the 50s and 60s. Like the like Chevy convertibles and stuff like that, 57 Chevy, that kind of a car. I definitely like seeing them in movies and stuff like that. And if I had so much money that all the other things that I wanted were I already had, if I could drive whatever I wanted, then I would probably pick up something like that to drive around. I definitely like the style and the design of vintage cars way more than what you see on the street nowadays,
Oh, I
which
couldn't
I think
agree
is
more, Chris.
a lot more boring and stuff. But even the 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, I don't so much get into like the real old cars from before the 50s,
I agree.
but
I think the 50s like the looks of those cars in the 50s, they're just beautiful. So much so that, I mean, I think a lot of people think that those are great looking cars. I really don't understand why they don't make some of them to look like that still. Because I think that people would buy them.
I think some of it's cost and safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they could add new safety features, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't know anything about, I mean, building cars or anything like that, but.
Well, I had a 57 Chevy on the Tyco racetrack. I love that. Nice. It was cool because our whole neighborhood would buy a car, like just a car, and then bring it over to the track my dad built because it was a fold out in the garage. He glued it together. Mm-hmm. And it had all these different levels, and then we'd race, and we'd buy these cars, which had this little thing, electric thing on the bottom that you would put in the middle of the track, and then it would take the car along with these controllers.
Oh, yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just love that car. I very seldom lost with that car, and I don't know if it was just a little more light or aerodynamic or what, but the other cars had a rough time trying to keep up with it.
You felt invincible.
Matter of fact, we talked about some of the questions we're going to talk about later, and I just changed one of my answers because of that. You mentioned the Chevy, and I was like, oh, I forgot something. But I did look up your I looked up Joe Hill Nosferatu. And then went to a car. I Googled on car, and I saw the car that you're talking about because it came up. That's pretty freaky looking.
Wow.
It almost looks like death. Like, I could see why it's in a horror book.
Uh-huh. Oh, I love them.
Yeah.
And I love the names of the Rolls-Royce cars. They're, like, called Phantoms, Ghosts, Wraiths.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, Wraith is a comic book, right?
Yeah. He did I think it was a prologue to the book, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a prologue to Nosferatu?
Uh-huh. It came out well after the book. But
well,
yeah,
hell, I should read
it. It was kind of like
thing.
The history of the bad guy.
Yeah. That I should read the comic if it's a prequel and see if I want to read the book. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Oh, and the next,
I love those cars.
The next question is from Joe Crawford. And he asks, what is our favorite issue 100? And that's a tough one for me because I don't keep track of numbers like Campbell and stuff. Like he like knows numbers of issues and I don't. I know stories. Yeah. I can remember stories and stuff, but I can't remember issues. So I'm going to cheat and say the only issue 100 I remember buying off the spinner rack and remembering it is Showcase 100. Cause I remember it had a Space Ranger and Adam Strange on the cover and, I loved that cover, and the story was kind of bizarre, but that's the one I'm going to go with.
It's a fantastic question, but that's a hard question.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I was trying to think of if there was any issue 100s that I read when I was a kid. And the only one I think I ever read was New Mutants 100, which would have been towards the end of Liefeld before he rebooted it to X-Force.
Yeah, that was the last issue.
Was it the very last one? Oh, yeah, it says mm-hmm. final issue all over the cover. But, you know, obviously, well, not maybe not obviously, but that wouldn't be my current favorite, but... It's hard to say off the top of my head, and the only one that immediately comes to mind is I know that because it would have been early on in the run would be Uncanny X-Men 100 mm-hmm. because you have the Chris Claremont era has started by that point. So I know that that's a good one.
Yeah, very good one. I guess I'm if I had more time to sit there and go through the different series, I probably would get a different answer. But off the top of my head, I probably will say Captain America 100 because it was the first issue where he went solo in the 60s, and that is actually one of the – I completed my run of X-Men just last year, and that is going to be next on my list, trying to get all of those caps from 100 up. And then if I manage that, then I'll slowly work my way and get all the Tales of Suspense that he was in as well. But for now, I'm just trying to get the actual Captain Americas, and I probably only have about 30 more to get. But I do have number 100.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, I really like that. It's such a great cover.
Yeah.
And Captain America has always been one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's also on my to finish. I'm gonna finish Daredevil, which I'm freaking close now. After my latest purchase, but probably gonna. I go off on tangents, but I think I'm really close to doing the cap, so we'll see. We'll see if who wins on their journey to finishing cap. I got the expensive ones out of the way, so I'm glad that I got the expensive ones. Now I'm kind of in the mid tier where you're looking like, 30 to 60.
So like I have 100 to 107. I also got 117 and 118. So those were kind of like the more pricey ones.
Yeah.
I'm really missing quite a few in like the one teens, which are still going to be a little
issues,
bit,
right?
Yeah, and Steranko ones too.
Yeah.
So those are going to be a little bit more pricey, but then I am missing like in the 130s, a couple 140s. And then really after that, it's just hit or miss up to 200. I have everything from 200 and up.
Yeah.
So mine are still going to be a little bit more pricey, and it's not anything I'm at this point going to be able to buy multiple issues of. It's probably going to be one issue here, one issue there as I see them.
So that's good. We got two questions. We had another one, but they didn't reply to the tweet, mm-hmm. and I can't find it. And I had posted it like... I don't know, midweek at like 2 a.m. when I was awake. so I can't find it. It goes to show how much I post, because it would be nice if there was a way to just filter the reply.
Yeah.
There's like tweets and replies, and I don't want that. But those are our questions. And now I think we could go into our book, which is... A Tales of Suspense that Chris picked. It was 74, right?
Yeah, I picked issue number 74 since it's episode 100.
it makes sense.
What's odd about it is I thought there was like a key appearance in it, and there is indirectly, but I was like, why did he pick this issue? Because the key appearance is in the following.
I was going to ask you, Chris, if you were just in the middle of reading those, or if there's a certain reason why you picked 74.
Yeah, there is a reason. It is kind of weird. I know that I picked it. The reason I picked it is because I actually, last year, picked up a physical copy of this issue.
Oh, yeah?
For like $4.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, it's intact. It's got a few tears on the cover, and then the bottom corner is kind of, it's got a couple of folds in it, or wrinkles. But, so I just thought it would be fun to read. It's a little bit ahead of where I think I left off in reading Tales of Suspense, but I just thought it would be kind of fun to read this physical copy since I hadn't read it yet.
I'm glad you picked it, because I got hooked on the cap stuff.
I noticed that.
And I really had a lot of fun. I read three of them, and I had a lot of fun writing the synopsis of them, because I keep it in my little document, so when I do weekly reads, I'll remember them. But they're interesting stories. Nice. The one thing I just want to point out before you summarize it is,
sure,
they did a really, really good job of both of the series leaving you on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. In these issues, like, I read 74, 75, 76, and each one had a cliffhanger in both stories. So they're like, okay, here you are now. How are you going to get out of it? It's like the serial black and white things they used to show before the movie.
I think they did a good job also of bringing you into it, too, if you just happen to jump in and letting you know what was going on.
Yeah, I think they always did a good job with that back in the 60s like that.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more common.
They did a good job of getting you up to speed and telling another story. So they didn't mm-hmm. waste a lot of time recapping, but they made you enough aware of what happened so you can fit into the story.
Right.
Yeah, they couldn't expect that people were following along with every issue.
Exactly.
People just would, you know, pick stuff up off the newsstand. Because you could buy comics on the newsstand then.
Oh.
And there are kids, and they're like, what if they don't have the allowance they, you know?
Yeah, they just happen to have money that day.
Yeah. I know we're getting off topic, but that's one of the things I used to love, is that as a kid, like, you wouldn't, like, you'd be experiencing some of these these titles maybe for the first time. And that was part of the fun, is just grabbing something that you've never seen before. And it didn't make a difference if it was number one or number, you know, 112. You picked it up, and they got you enough information, and then you just ran with it. And it was cool to read something that you hadn't been familiar with. So, yeah, I really agree with that.
Word. So, all right. Well, obviously, this was an era when the Tales of Suspense was split between Iron Man and Captain America before they got their own books. And the Iron Man story is first. Both stories were written by Stan Lee, of course. And Iron Man has art by Adam Austin and Gary Michaels. And it's called If This Guilt Be Mine. And there's a little caption that lets us know that in the last issue, the Black Knight took Happy Hogan from his hospital and used him as bait to draw out Iron Man. And Iron Man, though he managed to save Happy Hogan, he is in rough shape as this issue begins. Obviously, back in this time period, Iron Man is very, very dependent upon the power of his suit to stay alive, and there was limitations to how long his power would last, and there was still at this time a whole lot of talk about transistors and things like that.
Yeah,
which
it charges transistors.
Big deal.
Yeah, it
exactly.
charges those transistors, and it really should be capacitors.
Yeah, I figured that probably didn't stand up exactly to an engineering degree. Stan didn't have an engineering degree.
I didn't know this.
But you know what I was thinking when I was reading these is it's almost like the Green Lantern ring charge, except he could die because it's hooked up to his heart.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a way of giving him a weakness. When this issue starts, he only has a few minutes left of power. So he uses a radio in his suit to make contact with his lab, or with Tony Stark's lab. Pepper Potts is there. It seemed like she was waiting to hear from him, and he sends out a message with the address of where he's located, and Pepper immediately runs off to save him. And early on in the Iron Man stories, Pepper was pretty taken with, you had your love triangle with Pepper's pretty taken with Tony Stark, and then Happy is pretty taken with her. But at this point, Tony has specifically pushed her away and so that she's no longer interested in him because he doesn't feel like he could have a relationship with her and doesn't want her to be unhappy. But the unfortunate side effect of that is that she now admires and sort of kind of and has love for Iron Man because of the way that he's shown his heroism and thinking that it's a different person, of course. So anyway, she goes to the address and rescues Iron Man. He's got so little power he can't move. And obviously he's pretty heavy with that suit on, so she has to drag him to the car. I guess Stan's not a mechanic either, but I thought it was pretty amusing that that Iron Man hooks himself up to the car cigarette lighter like you mm-hmm. do with with your phone or your or back in the day, like you'd have the if you had a car with a cassette player, you put the cassette that went
pretty,
in there.
It's pretty dramatic. Like when he's crawling to the car, like, I'm gonna he plugs his finger into the cigarette lighter.
I just need to charge my iPod. But I thought it was funny that he says in the caption that Iron Man hungrily absorbs every iota of precious energy from the auto's battery. And I'm just thinking, I guess hopefully they timed it just in time that he didn't drain the battery out and stall the car before they got back to the lab.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're going to have trouble starting it after when they next go to drive it. But so Pepper gets him hooked up to the stuff in the lab so that he can charge back up, and she gives him an update on Happy that they got him to the hospital in time, but they're going to be using a new surgical technique on him called the Enervator, and this is something that Tony invented but gave to the hospital only to do further experiments on. It's not really ready to be used on a human being. So Tony, Iron Man, calls the hospital, he gets a phone call from a Senator Byrd. I think this is just like a subplot that the senator is threatening him to share his technology with them.
Do you think it's the real Senator Byrd?
I assume not. Usually if it's they only have the real people in there if it's a positive portrayal.
Yeah, because he was tough on Tony.
But he didn't seem like he was a bad guy the way it was portrayed. He seemed like he was coming and representing the government. Like
I thought he looked vaguely similar, probably what he really would have looked like back in the 60s, too, because I know that he died in, I think he was in his 90s, maybe 10 years ago or something like that.
I didn't think...
Yeah, it could be.
I've read more issues, so I don't...
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm a little biased, but I don't think... They portrayed him in a negative light. I think they portrayed him as a representative of the government that felt that Tony had technology that was due to them, and he was not releasing it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's only a few panels in here, so I could see if you got more of a taste of how they were. With a few more issues, it'd be easier to understand how they were portraying him. So that's cool. But anyway, yeah, it's just a sort of a subplot here. Iron Man charges up just enough that he can take off for the hospital because he's concerned about how what kind of effect it's going to have on Happy. And it's not going to be good, especially when one of the doctors says something like, will the treatment have any strange, unexpected after effects on Hogan? Somebody says that in a comic book, you know the answer is yes. and yeah, I mean, it almost immediately actually changes his physical form. His brow lowers, he loses his hair, gets a lot of muscle, basically becomes bald and has superhuman strength. He grabs the oxygen tank next to him and starts throwing stuff around. And
you know what's weird about the way he's structured? A few issues down the line, they have Ultimo, and he looks the exact same thing, except he's blue.
Oh, really?
So it's like they almost took the same concept art and just colored it in. It's weird.
So you're saying Happy is Ultimo?
Well, he could be. I haven't read that issue yet. I saw him on the cover, and I'm like, holy moly. I wonder if that's Happy. He could be. He could be transforming back. I don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You may have uncovered something there.
Yeah.
So Iron Man arrives, and they have a really brief fight, but Happy gets away after sacking Iron Man in the face, and starts running off. And Iron Man attempts to pursue, and that's where the cliffhanger comes in. As Happy's kind of, he runs off into the power station, and Iron Man's worried that he's going to do some damage there. But he's also thinking about the fact that he feels to blame for what's occurred. So I thought it was a neat little installment. What did you guys think of it?
I liked it as well. I really liked how you were kind of talking about it, but how Iron Man or Tony Stark was so dependent on his armor at that point, just to even stay alive. It made him obviously a lot more vulnerable. I liked that part of it, you know, back then where, you know, he couldn't necessarily just use it nonstop. You know, it would drain energy, which would cause him not to be able to fight, but also potentially be in danger of dying. So, yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it's a story of its day where, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, some experimental thing is going to actually restructure the way your entire body is shaped and stuff. You know, kind of amusing, but it was like, I really enjoyed the story for sure.
It's funny how they immediately used, the technology on him without like an FCC or anybody like any kind of approval. Just plug it in. He's going to die anyway.
Right. But yeah. The difference doesn't make, he's not going to get any sicker.
I wonder what the Black Knight did to him.
I don't know.
I'd be curious to see what he did that almost killed him.
Yeah. I didn't read that one.
I liked it. I like the Cap one a little more, but I'm also more of a Cap fan.
Yeah, well, this has Burning Layouts by Jack Kirby with blistering artwork over top by George Tuska, which I think you can see at the I think you can see the difference. You know, you can feel the layouts. That's definitely like the very first page. That's what looks like a Kirby Cap coming straight at you like that, but you could see that it's the Tusk over top of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But this one's called
The
like Final
Tuska.
Sleep.
I have discovered over the last decade that I didn't even pay attention to who he was and mm-hmm. Werewolf by Night and other books. I've grown a passion for his art.
Yeah. This one hits the ground a little faster, I think, even than. But they do double back and fill you in a little bit where The issue, or the story rather, starts just with Cap breaking in to a NATO Army Corps base and just crashing through security because he basically doesn't have the time to follow protocol. He's yelling about two sleepers that have been awakened, and he needs to warn them about the third. So he's got a bunch of army guys following after him, and until the General Logan that he's there to see comes out. What's going on here? What's the meaning of this? An entire platoon just to pin down one intruder. And Cap is able to communicate the information he's there to tell them that there have been these two sleepers, these machines that the Red Skull had hidden away in Germany. During, 20 years ago at this point, and that the two that have already arisen over the last couple of issues, I guess, have linked together. There was a walking sleeper and a batwing sleeper. Mm-hmm. Copyright DC Comics. So they've linked together in this machine that's flying over the land, shooting these ray powers out and stuff. There's a, but it's flying too low for NATO missiles to strike it without jeopardizing lives below. And there's this Nazi guy who stops his car, seeing it. And salutes Hell Hitler to the...
Yeah, he's like excited, though. It's funny. Yeah, it's like, he's so Hell excited. Hitler! Hell Hitler!
He's like, he's thinking, this is the best day ever.
Yeah. And he talks about, before he died, the Red Skull swore that the world will once again bow beneath the weight of the oppressor's heel, and now their tag is here. The path of glory lies ahead. Sieg Heil. Sieg Heil. And then zap. He just gets obliterated by the sleeper.
Wasn't a good day after all.
No, the sleeper is not discerning between regular person and Nazi scum.
Yeah.
So, as if we couldn't already tell, back at the base, Captain is talking about how the sleepers are not just to fight people who oppose Nazism, but to wipe out the human race. And that this third sleeper, when it rises, it's going to link up with the other two, and that it's probably kind of its brain. And like one of the guys says, it still sounds like a grade B science fiction plot to me, fella. Like Stan taking a little poke at his own story there. But the army mobilizes, tries to take down the two sleepers. But meanwhile, there's a Nazi sleeper agent in a German town. And he goes to the base of this statue of a General Friedrich von something Berholt. And he turns one of the letters on the statue. And just like the other Nazi, they weren't afraid to just shred some Nazis in these little comics. He's thinking to himself, my heart rejoices at the thought of the glory that shall soon be mine. Boom. And alas, whatever glory the consciousnessless Nazi had anticipated will have to be given him posthumously, for he leaves this mortal veil in the very next second. as the huge third sleeper indeed looks like a big head, looks like the kind of like the head of the Red Skull himself, flies up and links up with the other sleepers. It looks pretty funny, actually, when it all comes together, because it's this huge red skull-looking head with some wings beneath it, and the walker sleeper, they called it, looks like, you know, like four little feet. So it almost looks like a four-legged animal with an entire, with a huge head and wings.
Yeah, at first I thought they were going to put the head on top of the thing, standing upright. And I'm like, that's going to be a huge head. And then I was surprised when he was just on his back.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a small head, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks kind of funny, actually.
I thought it looked okay up until the head came on. But I can understand why it is. I mean, he wanted his image to be bigger than anything else.
Yeah.
He's an egomaniac, so.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that it looks silly. They end up figuring out that that it's probably on its way up to the North Pole, and that it's going to send blasts down into the center of the planet to basically cause blasts and tear the Earth's core apart. Götterdämmerung is maybe how you say that.
Beats me.
Twilight of the Gods. So Cap has him fly a plane close to the sleeper, and he grabs, puts on a flamethrower. It's got a big backpack part to it, and he's holding the nozzle with the hand that doesn't have his shield, and he just. Geronimo jumps out of the plane with the flamethrower, lands on the sleeper, and then affixes the flamethrower to the side of the on one of the wings, aiming it towards the skull. So basically he turns on the flamethrower, lets go of it, and then jumps off and opens his parachute and watches as it explodes.
Very hard to believe that a flamethrower, it's his weakness when you had an entire barrage of a military, including planes, tanks, and everything that couldn't fight it.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing was just knocking planes out of the sky in the panels.
Right.
A flamethrower. Yeah, I mean,
they may have needed to specify a little more that there was some kind of like weak spot that was too small for the other things to get or something like that.
Like the Death Star. Hit in this hole real quick.
Yeah, that might have been what they were going for, but they didn't have the space to explain it. But, I mean, I almost kicked my laptop over.
How do you kick your laptop? Isn't it on a table, or you put it on your lap?
I had it on my lap, and then I went to move it onto the ottoman.
Ah.
So on my lap, and then my foot came up and almost kicked it, or kicked it and almost knocked it off the ottoman.
Like Pele soccer.
Yeah.
Your laptop.
I like the idea of Captain America just jumping out of a plane with only a flamethrower onto this thing to take it down. The very Captain America type of thing to do. Putting aside like the plausibility of him doing it, but I like the actual action of him doing it was kind of fun. But it stretches suspension of disbelief a little bit there. But it was fun. I mean, like the one army dude says, you know, it's kind of like a science fiction plot. It's kind of crazy, and I like the craziness of it.
Mm-hmm.
The B-movie kind of aspect of it was fun.
So you selected the book that was the first appearance of the freak, Happy Hogan. And I thought it was so weird because when he first said it, I said, I wonder if that's the first appearance of Peggy Carter if it's the first appearance of Batroc. And I went and looked it up and it wasn't. And I'm like, well, why did he pick this issue? Strange.
Yeah. What the hell is important about this issue?
Because the next issue is very important. A matter of fact, it has...
What's the next one?
first appearance of Batroc and Peggy.
Oh, that is okay.
It's one of the reasons I kept reading. I wanted to read. And it's good too, because Cap comes back from the mission and he starts reminiscing about how bad his life is. Like, he's just mumbling. And then he runs across this woman with like a poster board type holder, like you know how they have those circular cylinders to hold posters in? It looks like that. And he like runs across her and can't take his eyes off of her because he thinks it's Shannon, I think, like his love, right? So he thinks it's her and he just follows her, and it turns out to be a device that could level the whole city that she's carrying because she works for SHIELD. And she's
Jeez.
protecting it from Batroc. So, because he's been hired for $1 million to find this device.
I think I might have read that issue before. It sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really good issue. Whereas the Iron
Yeah,
Man
I.
one kind of lingers, like this issue, the next issue kind of is more him and Happy fighting.
I think I've read a lot
And
of
then
these Cap ones just from the Masterworks, because I think that's how the Masterworks
yeah,
starts.
they right, that's how they start. So if you read the Masterworks, then you've read
It
these
was
stories.
quite a long time ago, but yeah.
I've read this off and on, like just I have never read it continuously, but because it's on the Unlimited app, I'll probably just keep going until I need to switch modes because it's interesting to me, especially the Cap stuff.
That's cool.
I it's the first time I've ever read Batroc's first appearance, and that was really good. I liked him.
Well, hope you guys don't mind me picking a issue of lesser importance.
No, it was good because it led me to the other stuff.
Yeah.
Plus the Cap one was really a good. I thought the Cap one was really a done in one, even though it ends up with a cliffhanger of him parachuting into the ocean, which he has to get saved from by the Coast Guard or the Navy. I can't remember who saved him. But it was like a good it was a good standalone issue, like from beginning to end. You knew this device, the sleepers were forming, and he had to stop the sleepers, and he ended up stopping the sleepers. So it was a complete story in what, 12 pages? Or it was something in that range, maybe 10? I don't know. It told a lot of story
10 or
in
12
that.
pages for sure, yeah.
And then there was like all the intrigue with the military, like Cap is trying to convince them, and nobody will listen to him except when the general get he talks to the general, and even they think he's blowing smoke. Like they're like, "What are you talking about, man? Have you lost your mind?"
That was good. Yeah, I enjoy reading those.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a good pick. You need to get Marvel Unlimited because for the cost that you pay for each issue, you'd have already made it up.
Know.
You could read a whole masterwork on there.
I know, but if I ever have enough time that I feel like I'm going to get my money's worth, then I will, but
I
like right
think you I
now,
think you'd get your money's worth.
it's all I can do is keep up with the current books, and then to go through, if I've got trades or hardcovers literally sitting on my floor, trying to get through those as well.
There's too
Every,
much
you know,
logic in that thinking, man.
I gotta,
There's too
and
much logic. It's t doesn't make
I'm.
any sense. No.
I'm like, obviously it's no comparison to you, Mike, because I mean you're getting your books every single week and you have multiple collections in every shipment. But I mean, I might get through, a collection, like two collections a month, but I'll get two or three collections twice a month. So they're just building and building and building, and it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do with all these?
You just According to Mikey, just
stack them,
accumulate indiscriminately, and call it a library.
Yeah. Call it a library. Build your library.
Yeah. It's the only thing.
I have been thinking about this a lot, though. Like, especially with the Marvel, like, because Marvel Unlimited offers so freaking much, and by the time I get to books anyway, 6 months is no big deal. It could be even be a year.
Yeah.
So, I've been thinking it, but then I have the compulsion, man. It's if they phase out books, it's probably a good opportunity for me to just jump in and just read, with the exception of the ones that the characters that I know I have to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Just follow everything digitally.
Well, I mean, it helps that you don't have to, you don't have that mentality like I do where I'm like, I have to keep up on these. So it's no big deal for you to, you know, just, okay, I'll just wait a few months to read them online.
In actuality, it's worse because what it does is I get to read like some She-Hulk and then I'm like, shit, I need to have a full collection of this. And then I go buy them, even though I've already read them. Just uh-huh. to put them in a box and say I have the whole thing.
So, I know, but doesn't that feel good?
So to like, know that they're there? Marvel Unlimited is actually causing me to buy more. Like, I never thought I'd be buying Howard the Duck, and I am.
Let's go back to Tales of Suspense for a minute, Mike. You don't have Tales of Suspense 39, do you?
Let me check. 39. No, I have 32.
Okay. Because you know 39 is the first.
39 is the Iron Man. No, I don't.
Yeah, first Iron Man. Okay. That would be.
I have the Doctor Strange expensive. Prototype.
I see that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool cover, too.
Yeah, it is. There's a couple of covers that I was thinking of buying that are older because I can get them. But, yeah, I don't think I'll have Iron Man anytime soon.
Yeah. That one's up there.
I am looking really hard at the 75, though, is buying that one. And that's a couple $100, so.
75?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to get that, too, just because it's got the Atron.
Plus, I really love the issue.
It's the first appearance of Sharon Carter, it says,
no,
too.
I just love the inner dialogue of Cap, like just coming back to, like, he gives you a history of everything and how bad his life is in this current. It reminds me of me wanting to listen to my cassette tapes and everything and griping about the current technologies and stuff and say, God, I wish it was like this. It was so much simpler.
Very cool.
So I thought we'd go over, the lists that I came up with actually.
Okay.
So one of the questions that I came up with was what are the top five games that you did as a kid or pre 18 or under that you liked, and they could be video, they could be physical, they could be anything. And I'll start it off just to give you an example. At number one, well, actually in no particular order, I'd rather just say five.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Is basketball, and that's the physical game of basketball, because I've been playing since I was like, my first friend, I walked over to his house, and we used to play basketball from like 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and then I go to sleep, and that I would do that every day. Like in elementary school. So I loved the game, and it's followed me all the way through life until my shoulders started slipping out of its socket. I stopped playing City League basketball, but I love basketball. And of all the games that I have on my list, this is the one game that I have spent the most time in my life doing. So I thought I would put that in my list. So,
cool.
Chris, you want to go next?
Sure. So, maybe not surprisingly, in last episode, I talked about how nowadays I tend to alternate between whether I'm more focused on comics or on video games. So I just decided to go full video games for my list. And I also, it also is kind of appropriate because I never really did get into playing any sort of organized sports or anything like that when I was a kid. So it works out. So I did all video games. And for number five, I put the first Super Mario Brothers, because I remember, even though I had some friends in the neighborhood and whatnot, that I got to play Ataris and Commodore 64 and stuff like that, the first video game system I owned, and also the first that really super captured my attention. I mean, I remember playing different games on Atari and finding them fun, but nothing ever really captured me like the first, seeing the first Super Mario Brothers and playing a friend's system, and then finally getting my own system and having that game. And so even though other games came afterwards and were more exciting for me, I just remember the impact of seeing and playing that game for the first time.
Cool. Yeah. I have a lot of similar things, but just older.
Yeah, I know, me too. For me, I think the first one I'll mention, and it's kind of funny to mention it in this way, but I'm going to say Neighborhood Hide and Seek. And this was and we were not by any means little kids, meaning we were, the group of people playing were probably all over 10 years old, but we would, we had a great neighborhood where there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood, between like a year older than me to like a couple years younger than my brother, who was 3 years younger than me. So all within like 5 or 6 years of each other. And we were probably all, you know, I was probably 12 or 13, and then, you know, my brother would have been 10. And we had probably sometimes 6, 8, 10 kids all converge on our house in the summertime. And every evening for like the longest time, we would actually use the neighborhood as hide and seek. I mean, we were hiding in just people's bushes. We were hiding. I mean, it was crazy.
That's dangerous to do in today's time.
It's very dangerous now, right? But I think about it then, it's like, it didn't even make a difference, like, who the neighbor was.
Yeah.
Or if they had kids or if they didn't have kids. You know, I mean, I would say probably, you know, most of the time you're probably, when you were hiding, you were hiding at, you know, in the yard of somebody that you kind of knew, but that wasn't necessarily the case, but it literally was almost an entire block that you were hiding and playing hide and seek. And it was, I mean, we did it for like an entire summer, and it might've been a couple summers in a row. And I still look back at that and it's like, oh my God, you could never do that today for a variety of reasons, but it was so much fun back then. And you know, you say hide and seek and you think you're little kids, but we were older and we were still having a great time. So that's one of mine.
Nice.
Cool. So my next one is also in the same vein of, Rob, except it only happened during, the course of maybe a week every year around the 4th of July. And it was the 4th of July neighborhood bottle rocket roars. And it was the neighborhood in one block against the neighborhood of another block every year. And it even got to the point where parents were making us like lead pipe guns where we could like put the bottle rockets in and launch them directly at our enemies.
Oh, sure. But what's the worst that could happen?
Not telling you to stop.
It was freaking dangerous. And but at the same time, it was as a kid, it felt, because of the danger and stuff, and you knew it hurt. Like, we got hit with them, and it hurt. My brother got hit the worst because he got hit in the face, and I was like, Pat, stop crying. You can't tell mom. You can't tell mom. But it was quite the adventure, and it was every year, and it involved uncles and relatives in the neighborhood. And on the 4th of July, we even had like bottle rocket thing seminars where we'd just like, we'd line up 100 bottles and just launch, like run by with a lighter and just light all of them. And it was a big deal back then, because you didn't have a limit on height of a bottle rocket, like how far it could go. They would go really far. Mm. They'd go like really high, and you could be like 50 yards away from somebody and the rocket would hit there. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It's funny when you think of the things that, you know, kids did and stuff, and it's like, oh my God, like I would never let my kids do something like that now.
Well, I wouldn't either. It was a bad thing, but it was like,
but you think back on it, it not like, oh my God, but how much fun it was. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, it was so much fun, but we were lucky that nobody got hurt. Yeah. And one time we had cops in the neighborhood circling because they were, I think they knew what was going on, and we were in the public school area doing it. So we were like hiding in like a little ditch in the kid playground. It was crazy. But this was like when I was young. This was like when I was in middle school and my brother was in elementary. So, mm-hmm. And I think the last year we did it was when he got hit in the face. Like we didn't do it anymore after that.
Is that, huh?
Yeah.
Even though you tried to keep it going.
We tried.
I
don't think we realized how dangerous it was until somebody really got hurt, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we had firecrackers.
He's fine now, right?
We had firecrackers.
His face
and
popped back in.
Bottle rockets blowing up in our hands all the time.
That's funny. I do remember, I wasn't involved with it, but I remember there was a bunch of kids that I knew, some were on my school bus, that they used to have BB gun wars at this kid's house.
Oh my
where
God.
They would run around shooting BB guns at each other.
That's really dangerous.
Yeah, we never got into that.
I was aware of people that did that, though.
Oh, yeah.
I just wasn't part of it. And I knew I didn't want to be.
Yeah.
I had no desire to, because I knew what a BB gun could do. Where I guess I didn't realize what a bottle rocket could do either. But
yeah. Yeah, but I think it is kind of funny that I decided to do a list of all video games, and then you guys so far is just all stuff like pre-electricity stuff that you guys used to do.
Hey, well, there wasn't any video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get there, Chris. So don't feel lonely. I'm almost there.
Yeah. So for number four, I did Street Fighter 2.
Mm.
Which wouldn't be a favorite, wouldn't be on my list nowadays. And you know, I'm not big into fighting games or anything like that, but I had to put on a list just the way that it kind of dominated time when I was younger. I didn't really get the chance to play in the arcades because I wasn't good enough. You know, I would stand there and watch the kids that really were good and would sit on the machines and play whoever wanted to go up against them and be kind of fascinated. But once it actually came out for the Super Nintendo and you can play at home, I used to play against friends of mine a lot, and I lost more than I won. I used to always play as Chun-Li, and it just basically just based on the amount of time we spent playing it and in the way that it was this kind of phenomenon when I was a kid. I thought it deserved a spot.
Very nice. I think the next ones I'm going to mention, probably, well, there's a few. I think one of the ones that I'll mention first is The Game of Life. Have you ever played The Game of Life?
Yeah, I'm playing it right now, dude.
Are you winning?
I don't know.
I
think so.
We used to. That was another one that just in the neighborhood for whatever reason my parents had that from whenever. I don't even know when they bought it, when they first got married, and were they playing board games? I don't know, but I mean, literally was like a late 60s edition of Life, and we would just play it over and over again, me and the neighbors across the street, my brother, and so I have fond memories of going back to some, and I could have named a few other ones. I mean, we played that, we played Payday, we played does anyone remember Masterpiece?
No.
It was a painting. It was there were classical painting games, and they were, you put assigned prices underneath them, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but you would bid for paintings, and then when you would actually get it, you'd flip it over and to yourself to see if what the value was randomly, and I think whoever ended up with the most money in paintings at the end one. And then there were some other ones like Stratego and Risk, and one that was called the Dark Tower. And the Dark Tower had this huge, like, actually electronic tower that would spin, and you'd press different buttons and stuff as you moved your icon up towards the tower, and whoever got to the tower won. So that's a lot of different ones, but it's just a random assortment of actual board games that we used to love to play when I was a kid.
I'm aware of all the games that you said, except for Dark Tower.
You don't know Dark Tower?
Or Masterpiece. Yeah. But,
I've never heard of Dark Tower either.
So you got to Google anyway. Right now. You got to Google Dark Tower game.
The games that ruled our household was Life was one of them. Payday was obviously another one.
Uh-huh.
Battleship. I can't remember. We had like the $6 Million Man board game, and a lot of those other weird themed games. Batman board game. But the one that we played as a family, that I would say Life was second, but the one that dominated was Monopoly. And Monopoly yep. became like an obsession, like a strategic. I mean, there was like bartering going on. There's all kinds of like behind the scenes stuff that I really like, and to this day I like it. Like I love Monopoly. I love competitive Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my next pick is Monopoly, and then I'll be getting into the video game era now.
You know, the one thing I want to mention before we go any further, I don't know, Chris, if you know this one. Mike, you wouldn't know it, but they had the Blizzard of 77 game.
No, I've never heard of it.
Oh my God. Chris, you don't know it?
I didn't know they had a game. No, I don't think so.
We own it. Yeah. There was a Blizzard in 1977 in Buffalo, Mike. And it like was one of the worst blizzards ever. So, and then they ended up making a game of it where you're trying to get to all these different utility places before it starts snowing, and then when you actually get a certain card, it will tell you to flip over the board, and it becomes the Blizzard side of the board. You can barely move, and you have all these like loser turns and stuff like that. Whereas on the other side, it's the sunny side of the board, and you can move a lot easier and stuff. But it was very entertaining. But you guys have to Google a Dark Tower game when you have a chance. It was absolutely it was a crazy game. It was like a Dungeons and Dragons type game.
Well, one other one that I want to have props for is the Mad Magazine game. That was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
I never saw that.
Let me worry, you worry. I mean,
used to play that,
the card game, it was like, it was a fun game. Hours of entertainment.
Yeah, we didn't have it, but my parents' friends had that game. I used to play it sometimes. But yeah, I mean, even though I did my list all video, like, we definitely did a lot of the board games growing up, some of the ones that you guys mentioned. And we used to play cards a lot too, and Yahtzee. I could have put Yahtzee on the list, especially because my grandparents were big on card games and dice games.
Same with
so
me.
So we play a lot of cards with grandparents.
Played Pokino, which was like a card game bingo, if you will.
Mm.
But we would play it like late. When I would stay at my grandma's house, she'd have her uncles or her brother and come over and his wife, and then we'd play late into the hours of Pokino. But card games were very big, which is weird because like my dad loves poker, you know, all that stuff, and I just don't like to gamble. My brother loves it, but he does, but I don't.
No, I don't. I don't like to mess around with money like that. I'll gamble for pretzels or something.
I don't mind. I'll do it for low stakes.
I will gamble, but I usually play like the newer penny games where you put in like 100 pennies at once or something like that.
Well, you can play for a long time, man.
But it's like, yeah, you play like a Batman or, you know, like the theme games, and they're kind of fun when you get to the bonus rounds, the mm-hmm. slot machines. Mm-hmm. But that's how I occupy my time when my parents or Barb's parents want to go to the casino, because that's where what they enjoy.
Yeah. That's cool. Rob, I looked up the Dark Tower game. That looks awesome.
Yeah. It actually looks like the movie Dark Tower.
And it's like funny because the game, you know, came out after, obviously, his book, but it has nothing to do with the book because he didn't even start writing any sequels to the book, I don't think, until like 2 years after this board game came out.
Yeah, and the book and the whole Dark Tower thing comes from a poem.
Yeah.
This
is more just a straight up medieval.
So
you know,
they
type
might have game. Gotten it from the same poem or whatever.
Probably, yeah.
But
I got to go downstairs and get that out because I still own it. And
still have Dark Tower?
Yeah. I don't know if the tower works at all. It probably had its batteries in it that long since corroded, so I'll have to take a look, but I doubt it. I have a working tower.
Check to see if it works, and then if it does, I'll be over.
All right. That's good. We can play virtually with Mike. We'll set up a FaceTime thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
That could be like a bonus, like a Patreon only.
Oh, episode. That's a good idea. I like it.
All right. So my number three then is A Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, which is a Super Nintendo game, and I definitely remember playing the original Legend of Zelda on the NES, but something about A Link to the Past, which is actually the third Zelda game, but the first and only one on the Super Nintendo, really captured my imagination and captured my best friend's imagination at the time. I just remember spending a lot of time in that world, and I actually replayed it a few years ago and really still enjoyed it. Just kind of the feeling of exploration and discovering different secrets. That was a game that definitely was big on different secrets, and that was at the time where if you didn't hear about it word of mouth, then you would have to pick up a magazine like Nintendo Power or something like that. But I just remember people hearing about different secrets and talking to people about, you know, my friend hearing something and showing me, oh, you can go over here and burn this bush. And I mean, the first game was like that too. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe the additional like graphics of the Super Nintendo and stuff were part of that excitement. That one really resonated with me the most. It was a little more. The first game almost just kind of, you just start and it doesn't tell you anything. You just like have to explore. And I think, especially as a kid, I had a little bit of a difficulty with knowing what to do, and I think A Link to the Past gave you a little bit more direction, so you could kind of figure out what to do. So yeah, that's my number three video game.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yep.
All right. So mine is what I'm gonna say is probably Galaga.
Oh, that's probably a good one.
That was like one of my favorite arcade games.
Me and you were on the, like, I know we're age different, but we're like on the
same. He's only 2 years younger than you.
No, but we're on the same wavelength as how we tackled this list.
But what was the difference? Was there a difference between Galaga and Galaxian?
Yes, there was a huge difference.
Was there? Well, I liked it both.
Galaxian was very much like it was a Space Invaders, except they would dive like one or
they
two.
They would dive, right?
Yeah, yeah. They dive. Galaga had all of the – it had different patterns at each stage. And then you'd have the tractor beam where it would try to pick you up.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The little blue ray.
You know what?
Down.
I'm thinking of Galaxian. I like Galaxian a lot.
That is the one I also liked.
What Mike?
I was gonna pick that, but I did my list by time, like where I think I engrossed the most time in games.
Yeah.
On the timeline, like where was most of my time spent, and your pick almost made my list because we had Galaxian as a handheld game.
Mm.
And you could play the villain or you could play the hero, the alien. So if you Google like Galaxian handheld game, you'll see the game that I had.
Well, but, I love Galaxian in the arcade, but then they finally released a version on the 2600. And when we got that, I'm like, oh my God, that was it was like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the differences now. I like them. I love them both actually. But if I had a pick between the two, I like Galaxian a little bit more. But yeah, so that's, I'll say Galaxian. I loved playing.
Cool.
All right, so mine, I'm going to jump into the Atari age. And I remember we went to Denver. We bought our Atari in Denver, which is really weird. But it was based on allowance that me and my brother had accumulated over a long, long period of time. And we bought an Atari, and it came with a game. And we bought two games, and both of the games made my list because we spent I can't even tell you how much hours we spent playing these games. But the game that came with the console on the 2600 is Combat. And we must it had all kinds of variations of how you can play tank games. Like you could bounce the bullets off of the walls, you could do invisible tanks, you could do all kinds of different tank games. But that made my list because we stayed up till I don't know how long playing that game. We played Combat so much, and we didn't have a lot of money, so we couldn't buy a lot of cartridges. But the two games that we did buy made my list because of sheer amount of time that we spent playing them. So Combat was on my list.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
So none of these games are my favorite, but they're games that I spent a hell of a lot of time doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you get to fighting games, I love Virtual Fighter, but that was when I had a job. And Madden, NFL Madden, but they were way later. All right, Chris.
Is it me again?
Yep.
My number two. Well, just to comment on what you said, I think that was another reason, too, with the original Super Mario Brothers was the fact that it came with the system. So, you know, when we actually got a Nintendo, that was all we got. So you just ended up playing that game over and over again, even though it was kind of difficult. But so for my number two, I have Final Fantasy 2 or 4. You know, the common thing with this is that it came out in America as number 2, but in Japan it was number 4, and nowadays it's listed as 4 over here. But we didn't get number 2 and number 3 originally back in the day, so they just called it number 2 because it was the second one we got. And I had never played a video game role-playing game. And this one was a little later in time than the other ones, but I had a friend, I think it was in 7th or 8th grade, had a Super Nintendo, and I just had never seen anything like it before in my life, watching him play his game. I'd never seen a game that played that way, like an RPG. And I was completely fascinated by it. He let me borrow it. I can't remember if I ended up playing just his or if I ended up getting my own copy of it or not, but I know I spent a lot of time talking or playing it and was just really fascinated by the story. I had, you know, never played a video game that was that long to begin with, and never played a game that had such a developed story where characters would come and go and leave your party, and some characters might not make it all the way through the story and survive. And just the level of storytelling and drama was not something I associated with video games before, and didn't know that kind of a thing existed. And so it was just a huge eye-opener for me and something that really resonated with me and made it, I think, was partially responsible for the fact that it's one of my favorite genres of games nowadays. And might have been one of the first times that I understood that Japan was where these games were coming from that I was playing. Didn't really understand that before. And nowadays, you know, I continue to have an interest in Japanese video games and Japanese culture and stuff like that. So
cool. I like the imagery of all that stuff. I listen to Pandora and don't pay for it, so I get the advertisements from Final Fantasy all the time.
it's a series that's still going today. I mean, the first game came out in the 80s, and Final Fantasy 15 came out 2 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's still going strong.
Well, I have one that I don't think that Mike will like at all. We'll see if I'm right or not.
Alphabetizing the game?
No, but all right, so this is
You gotta do it in the mood. You can't play games by what alphabet you're.
No, I don't do that at all. Okay, so for the Commodore 64, which I did not have, but I had the Commodore 128, which could play all of the Commodore 64 games. Was The Bard's Tale. This came out in 1985. I would have been about 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. And it was the first, it was a pseudo Dungeons & Dragons game.
Oh, that's why you said I wouldn't like it.
Uh-huh. It was a role-playing game, but it's single player. There's no type of, in 1985, there was no type of connection. You know, I don't even think there was any internet, right, in 1985. So you
houses anyways.
No. So you create characters. I can't remember if there was 4 or 6, but there's different classes and races that you would to decide to create them. And you literally would have to map on graph paper your each dungeon that you're going through. Because if you don't, there's no way that you're going to. It's going to take you forever to find your way back out.
Yeah.
And it went from place to place. And like the first one was a very simple, like square. And then the next one is bigger and bigger and bigger. And you had a map each one of those. And, you know, as you advance space by space, it wasn't a lot of, being 1985, it wasn't like a crazy, like graphic filled type game. like you would literally, as you're pressing forward on your keyboard to go each space, you would keep graphing, and then you'd press forward, and then at that point it would announce that there was like a monster or something there, and then it would go through the whole like turn by turn event for each one of your players to do what you want your players to do, as well as what the monsters are doing, until you defeat them or you're defeated, and then at that point you can keep moving forward and you get different things and so on and so forth. But at the time I absolutely loved it, and I probably played it for like I don't even know how many hundreds of hours going through each one of the boards. And when I actually won the entire game, I mean, it was like, it felt like a huge accomplishment because I had been playing it for hours. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, still a lot of games nowadays inspired by kind of that game design.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a well-known, I've never played it, but it's a well-known game.
I didn't know if either one of you had heard of it at all.
But. Yeah, I've heard of it. It's pretty well-known as an early computer role-playing game, and those early kind of dungeon crawler role-playing games are kind of what got imported to Japan and then ended up inspiring Japanese developers to make their own kind of variations of it, and that's what led to like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest and other genre and other series.
Okay.
Where those,
see, I didn't
like
no one knew that.
Bard's Tale and Ultima and like those really early computer role playing games.
Yeah, this was definitely an old one. Electronic Arts.
And Electronic Arts did a lot of those games for the Commodore.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah, I had a lot of those, and then I went when Dungeons and Dragons actually like leased out to do video games. I think it was a company called SSI, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
They did a bunch of those, like Pool of Radiance, I think was one of the first ones, and I did so many hours doing those as well. Cuz again, I think we talked about this last episode or maybe a couple episodes ago, how even though I was I would buy all those Dungeons and Dragons books, I actually didn't have anyone to actually play the games with.
Yeah.
So the fact that I was able to play them virtually by myself was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer though, because you didn't get that experience that so many people are so passionate about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it sounds like you would have loved that. Whereas I look at those games and I like get frustrated. I just I have like attention span disorder when it comes to video games, and if I have to walk around a room looking for a key or doing stuff, I just lose my patience and I get bored.
You're like the hell with this.
Yeah, but the one that I had on the Comic Store 64 didn't make my list is Larry Bird versus Dr. J, and I played that for hours, man. We're only going to have time to finish this set of questions, so I'm thinking we could use the next set of questions, the next one, and just wrap, you know, I'm on my last one here.
Sure.
So I'm kind of going in sequential order, like I said, and not by what I like more, because you guys are bringing up a lot of things that in eras that I really like, that I'd like to poke at it sometime. But the other game that we bought was with this Atari at Cinderella City. It was such an amazing mall. Back then, Cinderella City was like underground. It was like in a dark, and it had like cobblepot roads. It was weird. And they had, right next to each other, they had Heroes World, which was like a paradise to me because it was based on all superhero toys and stuff. And they had next to that where we bought our Atari, which was like an electronic type store. And the other game that we bought, and this is a shout out to Chris Campbell because he knows this game and he played it for hours too, is Laser Blast. It was from Activision. And it's like a most, like today, like this game does not stand up at all. I'd rather play combat. But back then, there was something about it that was really appealing, and it was just a ship that you'd shoot a laser down to destroy stuff, and God, it was fun. It just provided hours of entertainment right now. And the only thing that changed in the game was the speed. So it was always the same display, but it would get faster and faster and faster as you went on. So yeah, Laser Blast was the second cartridge that we purchased, and because we didn't have a lot of cartridges initially, we beat those games to death. I mean, that was just hammered those games. So Chris, you're up.
Okay, so my last one, you kind of alluded to this, but you know, back in the day, so part of the reason it's number one on my list is how I got it. And back in the day, you know, you didn't have any Best Buys, there weren't any GameStops, so you didn't have these huge stores. And the main place, the closest place to us to get video games was just this kiosk in the mall, where they it wasn't even a full store. It was just this kiosk and that had a bunch of video games and stuff. And you couldn't go on the internet and see, oh, this is when this game's going to come out. And, you know, it was a lot harder to figure things out. And, as I said before, you know, I really liked Super Mario Brothers, and we had Super Mario Brothers 2, which we liked as well. But I was super, super duper hyped for Super Mario Brothers 3 to come out. And to this day, one of the reasons it's my favorite is because it came out on a school day, and there was a lot of hype about the fact that it was coming out, and my mom wasn't working, and both my sister and I were at school at that point. And so she, at least I think my sister was, I don't know what my sister did with my sister, if not, but she waited in line for quite a while that day to get me a copy of Super Mario Brothers 3. And I still remember coming home from school that day, wondering if she was able to get it, and seeing it sitting on the counter right inside the door when I came home from school. And, you know, normally I had specific rules about, you know, how long I was allowed to play a video game at night. And but since it had just come out that day, you know, the rules were waived that evening, and I was allowed to just play. That's all I'd have, besides eat dinner, that's all I did that night was play Super Mario Brothers 3. But, you know, as a game itself, though, as well, it was really exciting. Because side by side with the first Super Mario Brothers game, it's kind of amazing that it was still on the same system. Just how they had gotten better at programming for the Nintendo and improving the graphics and all of that. And just so creative in the way that they designed the different worlds and stuff. I remember just sitting there playing and being fascinated by the different things that I came across and discovered in the game. I was hyped for the game, but it was limited in what I knew about it. So there was just a lot of surprises for me as I went through the game and different things I discovered. So it'll always, you know, have that kind of special place for me because of that.
Very nice. All right. I think I didn't even think about this until as we're doing our discussion, I'm actually finding it helpful to think of different things. I don't know that I had five off the top of my head when we started this conversation. But the other one that I wanted to mention is another video game called
Ghost. Now you probably have like 50.
Yeah, I probably could keep going. But
that's Ghosts and Goblins.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ghosts and Goblins.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cartridge on the 2600, wasn't it?
No. It might have been. It very well could be. It looks like it might have been. But how I remember it, and I don't know what the platform would have been, is that when I went away for college it would have been in the fall of 1990, the... in the dorm that I was in, across the hall, one of the guys brought whatever it was, and I can't think of the.
This was fun. This game was fun.
It was in 1990 or 1991. It would have been, but he nonstop. That we all, like, in that entire wing of the dorm, played Ghosts and Goblins nonstop. So I don't know what platform it would have been on. Back in the
I don't even remember either, but I remember
it was definitely it. On the Nintendo.
It was a Nintendo. Or, it was a Nintendo.
It might have
okay.
been on
right.
their stuff, but
then it would have been the Nintendo. Yep. Yeah, it definitely would have been.
This
Nintendo.
Was a great Nintendo game.
We
it
played.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, just
I remember it now.
Ridiculously hard, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we got plenty of practice. I'm telling you, I don't think anyone did anything that they were supposed to be doing on many nights, because we were just sitting there, just playing Ghosts and Goblins over and over again, just passing it from person to person. As you know, each person lost their life, then it was somebody else's turn.
Strange, because it had an arcade presence, and I never played it at the arcade, but I did play it on the Nintendo.
I don't remember it at the arcades at all. I just remember.
He would throw those blades. I remember he'd throw the swords.
Yeah, they were like lances or something. Like that.
Yeah.
Oh, so much fun. We used to.
Yeah, you got like hours. You lose
and the
your
music.
Armor
the I remember the creepy music that would play.
that was a good time. So I don't know. I mean, guys, since we're gonna wrap up early today, I mean, do you want to make this like two parts and we'll discuss more next time?
Yeah, we could do that, and then we'll probably just do the at the pace we're going, we could just do the next set of questions, and then the following episode, the next questions, because we go off on tangents based on that, which takes a whole hour, and then we have our book of the week or whatever, which is gonna be your turn next. So think
okay.
about
yeah,
what
so
you
I'll
want
pick
us to
something.
Read. Yeah,
and then we'll continue with these questions. Mike, these were good ideas for questions, because it really, you know, as you guys are talking, it's like, oh my god, I remember this game, I remember that game. I honestly, like I said this morning, like I don't have a list. I have a couple ideas, and then as you guys are talking, it's just making me remember all these different games that we were playing.
Yeah,
so, it's a lot of fun.
I totally mind blocked this game, Ghosts and Goblins, but I played it for hours.
Yeah.
This was one of my favorites, and I wasn't a Nintendo guy, but this was one of the ones that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Fun game. All right, well, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and this is Geek Brunch Retro, and Chris is at MythMakingETC, Rob is at Rob Krieger on the Twitter, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. We're on Facebook. If you search for Geek Brunch Podcast with spaces and click the like button, you'll be able to follow all the episodes there. Geek Brunch, Geek Brunch Retro, and Mike M's. And Chris, are you doing your podcast anymore?
No, not really.
Yeah, you kind of let it go wayside in video game world now. he's going through a stage. I'm reading book, so I understand the stage and the mood thing totally. So that's how to reach us. And I think we had another set of questions, two sets of questions that we'll get into in the next couple of weeks. So thanks for listening, and it's been a good ride, guys, at 100. Yay!
Thanks for letting me join just not that long ago. I've been having a great time talking to you guys.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Well, you guys have a good Sunday and enjoy whatever you guys are doing.
Thanks,
all
you
right,
too.
Thanks, you too.
See ya. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.